At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Today, I'm sharing an interview that was of both professional and personal interest to me. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Stephen Hodges. Dr. Hodges is an expert in childhood toileting issues and a professor of pediatric urology at Wake Forest University. He runs a clinic that really specializes in issues with toileting, with constipation, and is a wealth of knowledge in this area. I've had a lot of requests for podcast episodes on toilet training and more advanced toileting issues, so I thought he would be a perfect person to interview. Now, personally, I want to share a little backstory on why I was really looking forward to this interview. So my daughter a few years ago had encopresis, which is basically constipation. This caused major, major issues for her and for us. She had a lot of issues toilet training. She had a lot of issues with accidents. And we had many, many years without success. And this was actually honestly really hard for me because I'm a BCBA. I used to do toilet training, in-home therapy all the time. I considered myself to like really know how to toilet train a child. But with my own child, we really struggled. And it was because of this medical issue and because of this encopresis. And we went through actually several doctors that didn't quite know how to help her or gave solutions that didn't work. And at the end of our road, she was about to be kicked out of her preschool because of chronic accidents. And again, if you know me, you know I didn't take that sitting down. And I finally, in all of my research, came across Dr. Hodges' MOP protocol. And at our second pediatric GI, I was like, hey, this is what we're doing. I found this book and we're going to follow this protocol. And it was our last ditch effort. And I told Dr. Hodges before our interview, it really was a game changer for us. It was a long kind of battle with this protocol, but it worked. And she is, you know, totally fine with her gastro issues right now. And it really got us through this really, really challenging time in her life. I know a lot of children with and without disabilities struggle with toileting, struggle with constipation. Dr. Hodges is going to explain kind of the connection between issues with accidents, especially bedwetting, and constipation. I learned so, so much when I took a deep dive on researching this, on how the two are intertwined. So if you have students in your classroom that are struggling with accidents, that are struggling with constipation, if you are a parent, have your own kids with these challenges, I highly recommend reaching out to Dr. Hodges. Go to his website. Tons of great resources there. I did the whole protocol just with the support of my pediatric GI here, but his book outlines it basically. I could have done it without any support. Like, we jumped right in with it. So Dr. Hodges goes through a lot of valuable information on why toilet issues can happen, what some of the struggles can be, especially for kids with developmental delays and autism, and what some steps we can take to help our students be successful. And I think understanding some of the physiological components is really helpful for developing a plan, because some things that you might be doing really might not be helpful in the long run. So let's go ahead and hear from Dr. Hodges. Hi, Dr. Hodges. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm excited to talk about toilet training. We've had a lot of requests recently for more episodes on toileting and toilet training, and I know you are one of the experts, so I'm really looking forward to having you on.
Yeah, it's a passion of mine. I want to help these kids because I know it's definitely fixable.
It really kind of can take over the whole family and school and everything. So I know for so many families, this is like the number one most important thing.
Yeah, it can sabotage. Yeah, like we were talking off, you know, get kicked out of schools and stuff. It's not funny business for sure. It's serious.
Exactly. So thinking specifically about children with autism or developmental delays, why can toilet training sometimes be more challenging, especially for this population of kids?
Obviously, there's the kind of the basics that everyone would know about just offhand, like the communication issues, maybe perhaps, or coordination or developmental delay in general. So if you're having developmental delay with other milestones, it's not unexpected to have potty training or toilet training delays. But taking all kids, all comers, the retained or poop withholding, for lack of a better word, and retained poop, which dilates up the colon for people that are familiar with my work, but basically severe constipation at the end of the colon, which may or may not be apparent to the family, but happens in kids, sabotages potty training because you lose bladder and bowel control when that happens in severe cases. And that process is way more prevalent in kids, neurodivergent kids. So let's say you say, you know, 10x maybe, you know, in the worst cases I've seen of backup of poop have been in kids with autism. Family most of the time had no idea, you know, they just thought that they were doing fine and just couldn't understand how to potty train. But once we fix the bowels, most of them were potty trained fine.
So can you talk a little bit, you mentioned that, like, if people are familiar with your work, but this connection between constipation and going pee and toileting, and I shared with Dr. Hodges prior to this interview, my daughter had encopresis and I had a really hard time toilet training her. And I wouldn't have thought for a long time that constipation was really at the root of the issue, and it affected kind of everything. So can you kind of give your elevator speech on how this is all related?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I can give a short version. I'll try. But basically, when I was training, you know, there was a cookbook we taught for kids with bladder dysfunction. And there's over history, there's been different theories on what caused bladder dysfunction in kids or elimination dysfunction, for example, peeing and pooping. And when I was training, it was thought to be a pelvic floor a dysinergia. For whatever reason, these kids don't know how to relax their pelvis when they need to pee or poop. And that leads to problems. And so the therapy became biofeedback therapy, where you'd see a physical therapist and they would train them to use their pelvic floor in the proper way. So do a Kegel when you're supposed to and not when you're not supposed to. So I was doing a lot of the traditional therapy and seeing, you know, mediocre results. And I happened to go to a course where they were teaching us how to take care of kids with more severe congenital anomalies, such as imperforate anus or cloacal anomalies. And those kids have bowel issues for various reasons. And to manage their bowels, they were doing x-rays. So I said, oh, that's interesting. I've never done x-rays for constipation. I'll check out these kids that are having these problems that aren't getting better as fast as I would like. And so then I would do x-rays when I got home. Luckily, we had an x-ray machine down the hall. And they would say, we're pooping fine. We just can't make it to the potty. Okay. I was like, okay, let's check an x-ray. Jam-packed full of poop. I'm like, you sure they're pooping fine? They're like, yeah, they're pooping great. Well, let's just humor me and let's get them cleaned out. And we got them cleaned out. Their bladder got better. And I was like, this is, you know, this is life-changing, world-changing. I'm going to win a Nobel Prize or whatever. And so I told my resident we should write this up. And when she's researching it to write it up, she called me up. She goes, there's a guy in like, that wrote about this in the 80s. This is not new. And I'm like, how do I not know? Because we're taught. And in throwaway lines in our books are this guy named Dr. Sean O'Regan, who talked about bedwetting being due to constipation. And somehow it got lost to history, like the severity of the constipation, how aggressive you have to be to treat it was lost. And it got replaced with this pelvic floor. And I found Dr. O'Regan. We talked about it. He says, yeah, you know, this is kind of the deal. And when we followed his plan or strategy, and when we kind of modified it, which is why MOP is called MOP, because it means modified O'Regan protocol, we've been able to have really good success and transition from not just bedwetting, which she dealt with, but day wetting and poop accidents. And then, you know, seeing all these kids over and over, we found like certain kids have more severe backup of poop, and that includes kids with ADHD and kids with autism. And it's led to research of, you know, all those facets of this complex problem.
It's really interesting how like you figured this out and like went back and found this person. Like, oh my God, they already discovered that. You know, I hope that, you know, parents or teachers supporting students that have had kind of these chronic toileting issues for years and years, if you haven't looked at, you know, the constipation issue and the role that plays, to really consider that. Cause, you know, personally, my daughter, you know, pediatrician was like, oh, it's normal, first GI, like, oh, it's okay, a little Miralax. And it took us a while, even with different doctors, to figure out the right solution. And in the meantime, it was multiple years of her being pretty uncomfortable, but then got to the point of her almost kind of getting kicked out of preschool because they didn't consider her toilet trained. And I can imagine a lot of kids are in similar positions on pediatricians just not knowing and being like, oh, it'll work itself out, you know, they'll grow out of it kind of thing. But in the meantime, that can have a big impact on families and the kids.
Yeah, you know, I wish it was as easy as just like, okay, they're backed up, here, fix it. I think, unfortunately, it's a little tougher. And so that kind of sabotages people's almost belief in the program. And for two reasons I see. Number one is they come in and the kids like never had a poop complaint, right? So they're like, what's this guy talking about? Because kids get backed up with poop, you know, surreptitiously, like no one knows. They're kind of holding it secretly and it backs up really severely over time, slowly, like, you know, slow and steady. And so they don't notice it. So I get a lot of x-rays to kind of show the families, look how backed up they are. And that usually leaves an impression on them. And the second part is you have to get so much poop out and get them so empty. And you know, in cases of encopresis, it's a little bit easier in your experience because you don't have to empty them out too much for poop to stop falling out. But for the colon to become shrunk down enough that daytime wetting or daytime urgency or frequency or bed wetting or just potty training to happen, you have to get the colon shrunk down quite a bit, and people will give up because they'll feel like, you know, they've got to be empty. You know, I've done like, you know, so much Miralax, they've got to be empty, but they may not be. And so What I've learned to do is just, you know, if the kid's getting better, okay, they're doing fine, they're getting empty. But if they're not getting better, I just check another x-ray and see where we are and compare them. And more often than not, if the child's not doing better, then they have not gotten empty.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What are some symptoms or signs that parents or teachers can potentially look for to notice if constipation is happening? I know you said some kids you may not know right away, but what could they be looking for?
Depends on like the age. I think one of the early ones to pick up on so you can be aggressive, because I do think that the sooner you pick up on their withholding and the sooner you treat it, the more aggressively you treat it, the less issues they'll have. And it's as simple as process as, you know, an infant going to, you know, to poop and it hurts and they stop wanting to poop, right? So they try to hold it in. So if you see a child, you know, crying, screaming, straining to poop, that can be kind of early on, it's called a condition called dyskinesia, right when they're born. They're trying to figure out the sensations, and that may persist or may not. But typically we'll see it changes in diet, such as when you go from formula to milk, or you start adding table foods, or maybe get some antibiotics, anything that makes the poop either a lot looser and then firms up, or firmed up like from food. Changes in texture can lead to withholding, and you got to jump on that if you see that happening. Kids hiding to poop is a real common one. If they have to go in a corner in a closet or a playground corner to poop, that's they're thinking about it way too much, and that means they're probably, you know, have some issues there. So that's a very significant sign of constipation. And as they get older, basically, if you can't potty train, they feel like they don't know when they need to pee or poop, or they're peeing and pooping without any sensation that it's actually happening. In a healthy kid, those are signs of a significant backup.
Okay. When a teacher notices that, you know, maybe is happening in a daycare setting, preschool setting, you know, we're seeing the hiding, and I've definitely had clients and students that have done that. What is the best step for educators in the classroom setting or a school setting on approaching parents about this? Because I know that can sometimes be a hard conversation about when do we start potty training and how the schools can support families.
Yeah, I see a lot of articles. You know, I have some Google alerts set up for topics I'm interested in. One's, you know, potty training and toilet training. And the big dilemma, especially in Europe and England, is late potty training. And they'll say, you know, the teachers are frustrated because kids are showing up, you know, 4 and 5 years old, not potty trained. And so I obviously am a fan of delayed potty training because I don't want kids to be trained too young and to have, because they don't know enough to go when they need to, right? They might start holding if they don't have an option because they're immature. So I try to set some parameters though, like before 3, I don't think it's useful potty training because they're not as developed. And I've had more problems when you train them younger, because if they can train, they tend to just figure they'll hold things in forever. And that's not a good thing. But if they reach 4 and they're not trained, most kids should be able to train at 4 by 4. And there's usually an issue and then they can address it. So if teachers are frustrated because a child should be potty trained because they're 4 and they're just pooping and peeing all over themselves, I would direct the, you know, parents to kind of our resources, because I think that we can explain it as well as anyone. And we have a website, you probably can share, but it's like bedwettingandaccidents.com. So delayed potty training, or where they can't potty train, or they just seem to have no sensation, appropriate sensations lacking, like the signals aren't getting to the brain, we can definitely help with that. And I don't like to explain it away if it's a delayed age. Like if they're 4 and older and they're having accidents, I don't like to think, well, you know, they're not ready. There's a reason why they're not going, and we can address it. And I think we'll give the parents the resources, then they can be advocates for their kids and get addressed. Because there are other issues too. Like, you know, there could be significant problems other than just simple constipation that's limiting their ability to potty train. And it helps to get that kind of worked out with our system.
What's your advice on parents for kids that are, you know, 4 and older that are a little reluctant maybe to even take that next step? You know, I've definitely worked with families that it's such an intimidating thing, especially as kids get older and older, that, you know, they've kind of fallen in the routine of like diapering and like, all right, I don't know if I can handle that. There's like such an emotional component involved. What's your advice on those kind of reluctant families?
Yeah, I don't like to push people, especially if there's developmental delay issues or kind of, you know, autistic kids, which maybe might be the least of their concerns. At its most basic level, as long as they're getting empty, you know, they're pooping and peeing, then I'm not too concerned about where they pee and poop, as long as they're not getting backed up. But if they're at an age where they could be potty trained, they're otherwise developmentally normal, and the issue is just kind of convincing them to do the right thing, where that maybe the kid's just gotten used to pooping in a pull-up and they just ask for a pull-up, for example, that we have several techniques to help with that. Peeing in general, typically, once they're aware of it, you can't like make a kid pee. There's like no drug to give that makes a child, you know, void. But they typically are able to get a hang of that if the colon is healthy and functioning normally, and you get the normal bladder sensations, you know, they'll go pee. And if they have trouble with that, you know, we could talk to them, but it typically happens much more easily than pooping. Pooping is a much kind of more brain intensive, you know, sensory intensive process. And so the kids, we typically see some kids that just don't want to poop on the potty and they want to poop on a pull-up no matter what. We have a couple of techniques I can talk about if you want on how to get them to do that. So one's kind of like a gradual way and the other one's kind of sink or swim kind of way. So if you look at, there's a really good book called The Ins and Outs of Poop written by Duhamel. And he's got a technique, which I've used a lot, where kids are just like peeing normally. They're great. They're not constipated, but they just don't want to poop on the potty because it's a weird sensation. And some of the downside of delaying potty training is that they get set in their ways, right? Because they got their brains pretty developed. So what he had is, okay, you can poop in the potty. Number one, you have them pooping regularly on Miralax. So there's no concern. They're not like hiding. They're just putting the potty on, putting the pull-up on and pooping and be done with it. So say, okay, pull-up's fine, but we're doing it in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And then he says, okay, we're doing it in the pull-up, but you got to do sitting on the potty. And you get the idea here where it gradually transitions them to pooping on the toilet. And the funny thing about this is that kids can get so hung up on this stuff that I've seen it firsthand with some of my kids. And he has an interesting story in the book where this one child was so obsessed with putting on the pull-up to poop, but they had cut a hole in it because she wouldn't let them take it off, but they wanted her to poop on the potty. So they had cut a hole in the pull-up and she had never gotten poop on it. So they just stopped buying them, right? Because they didn't need more pull-ups. And so it became, you know, after a while, like a tattered belt that she would strap on. But she needed it like a security blanket to poop. And eventually she kind of got rid of it.
Yeah.
So that's how kind of strong these emotions and, you know, humans are kind of like too smart for our own good, right? Sometimes.
You could see like some super routine based kids like really hold on to that. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, you know, like my daughter's blankies or whatever when they're growing up.
Yeah.
And then the other extreme is useful. In a lot of kids with developmental issues, very useful in the autistic kids, is that these kids, they won't poop unless the urge is super strong, like hyper urge, right? So if you got to create a strong enough urge that they're like going to poop. So this was developed by Dr. Dom. He's passed away tragically, but he had a great system. And his system was really, sounds nuts here, but just bear with me. So he had three tenets for his system, and it works, trust me, for any kid that's not pooping the potty. And you don't even have to be able to communicate with them. They'll get this. And this is what I want to stress. All my stuff it's not based on convincing a kid or rationalizing with a kid. It's just you create the right sensations and the body takes over, right? That's what we do. And so he had three tenets. One is that they have to be near the toilet. So he would literally keep them in the bathroom for the whole process. And this usually takes, on a daily basis, 5 to 8 hours initially. So in the bathroom. Number two is no bottoms, because he's like, you know, if they're wearing bottoms, that's some kind of barrier where the kids are much more likely to poop in underwear or pull up than they are to floor for whatever reason, although they're extreme cases. And the third component is an overwhelming urge to poop created by X-lax. And he said they played around with the dose a lot, and he figured out that everybody poops with 6 X-lax squares, which is 90 milligrams of Senna. So he would give these kids 6 X-lax squares, give them some toys and stuff to hang out in the bathroom with their bottoms off and just let them hang out. And 5 to 8 hours later, huge urge to poop comes on. They got nowhere to go and they know it's coming and they sit on the potty because it's right next to them and they poop. And once you've done that for a few days and you figure out the timing, you can just schedule your life around it. We say, okay, they always poop at 5 hours later. He's eating dinner at 5. We'll give the X-lax at noon and he'll poop at 5 and eventually you can get off of it. But they need that urge, and it flips a switch in their brain where the urge to poop is easily avoidable by clenching their, you know, doing a Kegel to, if I have the urge to poop, I'll go poop. And I've seen it work countless times. It's very effective.
Okay. I actually read about that when I was in my throes of looking for strategies for my daughter. But you kind of said, you're like, bear with me. You know, it sounds like extreme, but I think when you've had a kid that it has had issues for so long, you know, you have to really do something different. And especially I think for kids on the spectrum that are so routine, and that routine is so powerful that you need that sensation as well, or else you're just going to be stuck in like this vicious cycle.
Yeah. I'll give you a good example of a case that really turned me on to that is that, you know, my system was enema based. Dr. Regan's program protocol is enema based. So, you know, you get to put the enema in, and you go poop. And so it's like, you kind of know the poop is coming, right? So it's hard to ignore it because someone just put something in your bum and then you got to sit on the potty and the urge to poop comes. And if you empty enough poop out with the enemas, they will not have accents, but you got to keep doing the enemas off. So at some point you have to get off the enemas and let them poop on their own. I had this one kid that just would, every time we got her empty, we'd stop the enemas and she would just get backed up again. She just wouldn't poop. And get her empty again and restart the enemas and she just wouldn't poop. She needed either the enema urge or she wasn't going. And we got the Dom method and one day of that and it flipped a switch and she was pooping with the X-lax. And so there are some kids, they just, whatever urge you need to poop, they need it. If the normal urge is 2, they need a 10, you know. And once they become mature and can think through it, it's not a big deal. But yeah, and a lot of kids on the spectrum as well, because they're dealing more in like sensations, it's important to have strong sensations to kind of drive them to that behavior. And then we have, you know, obviously ways to get off the X-lax, but it's very effective and can help a lot of people.
It's really interesting that, you know, a lot of your protocols and strategies are really not focused on communication, because a lot of, you know, what we think about like more traditional potty training, it's like asking to go potty and all this, but really at the core, when there are bigger issues, it's connecting that, you know, interior feeling with actually sitting down and going and developing that connection versus, you know, the communication piece, which I think is important to hear, because a lot of kids that maybe have limited verbal skills were like, oh, wait, well, let's see if they can get more communication skills first, but you don't necessarily need that.
Yeah. And I think not to push, you know, training before they can talk or anything like that, but it is just, you can't reason through any of this. And I picked that up early in my clinic, like early on, there was kids that would pee on themselves. Right. And I was like, well, you know, if you have a cursory understanding of this and the kid can't hold their pee, then you say, well, why don't you try to go pee every 2 hours? Right. So then your bladder will be empty. It makes sense. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you say, well, they can't stay dry for 2 hours. Like, why don't you go pee every 1 hour? Why don't you go pee every 30 minutes? And it, you know, to a crazy, ridiculous extreme. And what I found for those kids is they would do that and then they would sit there and not pee and then get up and have an accident. Mm-hmm. And it hit me. I saw it so many times. I understood that this, when they're having these accidents, it's not like they need to pee and they're not going. They are just it's like someone is giving you a knee reflex, you know, they hit your leg with a hammer, but they're saying, don't move your leg. I mean, your leg is going to move no matter what. So they weren't getting normal sensations. So they're having these accidents. And then you're making it worse by having them try to either pee or poop when they don't feel like they have to pee or poop. Like, it's never wrong to, as adults, we understand that sometimes you go pee and maybe you poop and you don't really know, but you sat there and give it a chance. But that takes high level thinking. And for kids, they have to have an urge and they have to respond to the urge. But the problem is the kids we see, the urge is either non-existent or so high that they have to squat or curtsy and hold it, because if they move, they'll leak, or there's no urge at all and they just pee on themselves. So by getting the colon regulated, you get that sensation that we feel where, like, I could probably go pee now, but I can hold it. Oh, I have to go pee more, or I really better go pee. And I often use example for families to help them understand, like, you know, if you go home right now and I say, don't pee until, you know, don't pee until you have an accident, right? Hold your pee until you pee on yourself. That's like saying, you know, don't eat until I tell you, or don't sleep until I tell you. No matter what you do, you're going to, brain is going to make you sleep, make you eat. And so the brain will drive you to go pee because the urge will become so severe. And that urge works normally in adults, and in kids, they don't get that urge. But if you fix the colon, they will. And that's why they go normally. And I can explain, if you want me to get into detail, like why the accidents happen, you know, physiologically.
Sure. Yeah.
So what I was talking about, where you feel like if you're like working, you know, we've all been there where you're like, you got to go pee, but you don't have time. And then it gets urgent and urgent. And eventually you're like, man, I'm going to bust. And so you finally go pee. That's the way it's supposed to work. So you get this urge and you fight it, but eventually, you know, the brain drives you to the bathroom. But when we were infants, you know, we didn't think about peeing, right? It was a reflex. It was a sacral reflex. So your bladder filled and at some volume, it just emptied. No brain involvement at all. When you potty train, you go from the infant voiding to the adult pattern. But it's not like it's not like a switch, one on, off. The infant pattern dissipates and the adult pattern kind of takes over. But if you have retained poop, it will cause that infant pattern to fire off, you know, more, depending on how backed up you are and depending on your genetics. And so you can pee like an adult. You can pee with sensation, but it'll be perturbed. And more often than not, it'll just pee randomly without even telling your brain, hence the accidents. Like all infant reflexes, it dissipates over time. So, you know, there's no 25-year-olds in my clinic with bedwetting, but there's a lot of, you know, 5-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds, and so forth, as that's going away. But if you get them their colon fixed, it goes away normally like it was designed to, and they can pee normally.
Okay. So much behind the scenes on all of this, and it's so crazy how, you know, for some kids it goes so easy and nicely, and other kids it doesn't.
That is a good point. Yeah, right? You know, if you took an X-ray of like maybe your kids' classmates, they may all be constipated, right? Because kids hold their poop. But only some of them will have bedwetting. Only some of them have day wetting. You know, some of them may have encopresis. And so the genetic variation in that is not easily explained, but it's definitely real.
Mm. So you mentioned earlier, you know, really early potty training can be problematic. What are some other common missteps or mistakes that people can make during the toilet training process that can really cause some problems later?
I think thinking that potty training will fix issues, like some people think, well, you know, my kid's having issues with constipation, I'll potty train them to make, you know, to make it better. That makes it worse. Thinking that feeling the pee on them will make them go to the bathroom again. Being in pull-ups versus underwear so they can feel being wet doesn't make a difference because the horse is out of the barn, right? They've already had an accident and they're not controlling it like we talked about. It's a reflex that they don't even know happened. And also ignoring the problems, you know, just saying, well, you know, they're in a phase. And doctors do this a lot, I hate to say, but, you know, I'm not blaming anyone. Pediatricians have a lot on their plate and they handle, you know, the entire child's health. But it's easy because most of these issues do go away, and because they don't typically cause lifelong harm, it's easier to just say, well, just wait a few months or wait a few years. But I'd much rather these kids get treated right when they show accidents so that they have less problems long term.
Yeah, agreed. And then I get, for sure, I understand that with a pediatrician, there's so much they have to look at. And I'm sure some kids, they do grow out of it. But then when the kids don't, like, what's the next step after that?
A lot of years of changing sheets.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I, you know, personally am super interested in this, but I know, you know, so many parents and educators in our audience are dealing with similar struggles. And you're such a wealth of knowledge. I'm going to link your website and your book in the show notes. And, you know, please reach out to Dr. Hodges if you have specific questions. You do online consultations, correct?
Yeah, we have a lot of, you know, free online resources. We have a lot of paid, you know, books and stuff. And then we obviously have, you can contact us. And yeah, please, if you're having trouble with potty training and any type of child with any kind of issues or persistent poop or daytime pee or nighttime pee accidents, I consider them all abnormal based on, you know, certain exceptions for congenital anomalies, but we can definitely fix them. So if you're getting kind of the runaround, let us know. We'll help you out.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hodges.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.